Madison was chosen as one of the national sites for displaying one of William Shakespeare's most treasured books. The first folio, published in 1623, was the first collected edition of Shakespeare's plays, many of which were not published during his lifetime. The rare book will be on display at the Chazen Museum of Art in Madison until December 11th. Joining us now to tell us more about this rare exhibit is Joshua Calhoun. He's an assistant professor of English at UW-Madison and faculty affiliate with the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies. Joshua, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob. Good to be here.
Well, tell us about this first folio, how it came into being, its significance.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing opportunity for us to have it here so that people can come see what's, look at it in the Chazen and understand, we don't think about the book as a technology, but it is an important technology. It's a technology that allowed Shakespeare to do the reading that he did to collect the ideas that came to him so that he could put them into into written form, into plays and into poetry. And it's a large book. It's funny the way you can think about the size of it. You think about four mass market paperbacks, maybe copies of Louis L'Amour. My basketball coach used to love those. He put four of them on the table, two side by side, and up and down you've got the size of that folio. So it's about 9 by 14 inches, and it would weigh about 4 pounds, about 900 pages in it. And it's a massive book that takes all of Shakespeare's known plays at the time, 36 plays, 18 of which hadn't been printed before. So the reason the exhibit is called The Book That Gave Us Shakespeare is because there's presumably these 18 plays, some of which many people have probably heard of, like Macbeth, or Antony and Cleopatra, Julius Caesar, among the comedies, As You Like It. Yeah, Comedy of Errors, Twelfth Night we wouldn't have, and one of my favorites, The Tempest, we wouldn't have, perhaps, if this volume hadn't been printed, because they'd been printed in a smaller format, half of them had, but half of them had never been printed before, and this printed them and preserved them in a way that we still are able to be saving and keeping from bio-deteriorating.
Wow. So if they hadn't published this back in 1623, a third, I don't know, of Shakespeare's plays would be gone to us?
Really, I mean, half of what we know, we've added to, there's a couple more that come into play. But, you know, the other thing that they don't, I'll tell you, your listeners, something that's not part of the, I haven't been seeing it really passed around officially. I think it's an important thing. You know, King John is one of those plays that we would have lost. And I don't have a ton of affection for King John. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, and sorry to listeners who do, but we would have lost the chorus to Henry V. That chorus that was, when Henry V was printed in the quarto, it didn't have that "O for a muse of fire," right? The talking about cramming into a wooden O, the casks of France. And so that, those lines, that opening chorus that people associate with Henry V, that also was not in that early edition and wouldn't have, we might not have had, if not for the folio, which I would trade King John for the chorus from Henry
V. Wow, okay. Now tell us about the origin story of the first folio. What do we know about who put it together, why it ended up being published?
Yeah, we know that John Heming and Henry Condell, two fellow actors in Shakespeare's acting company, put it together 7 years after his death. They present it as a monument. It's to the great variety of readers, although it would have been expensive for somebody to buy. It's put together as a monument. They collect poetry in the front of it from the likes of Ben Jonson. Jonson famously says he's not of an age, but for all time, in the dedicatory poem. This famous image by Martin Droschut, that's this. It really is a fairly sort of not particularly flattering image of Shakespeare, but it's an iconic image that we all, you know, see used for memes. And
if we try to picture Shakespeare in our minds, that's the picture.
That's
that
the image.
Is the source of that.
That's right. Right, and then it always gets played with, right, which is the brilliant part of it. Recently, somebody posted something to me, you know, that one with Shakespeare with a cheese head on. You know, you could put a party hat on, right? It's this image that we play with Shakespeare in our head. But yeah, that's the iconic image, and they put it together as a way, you know, what they say is to make Shakespeare available to be read. Obviously, most of these were being performed on the stage or had been performed on the stage, but now it's an opportunity to go deeper, to read, and you get a lot of changes come into the text. And so this leaves plenty of scholars a lot of work to do and to write books on.
As I understand the way plays work, I'm not a theater person myself, but they might be revised from show to show by Shakespeare and his actors. Like, oh, that line didn't work. This one got laughs. Let's do more with that. So at some point, somebody is making an editorial decision. What's the final version of a Shakespeare play that we're going to publish?
That's right. And I think, you know, some people... I don't tend to get bent out of shape about the changes. I kind of love the way that that ideas change when they come into different media. Mm-hmm. You know, radio. This is my first live interview, Rob. I've never done this. It's a different format. I know you can't go back and edit if I say something really stupid, which makes me nervous. In the same way,
I'm nervous too. Thanks.
Yeah, right. You know, you've got a live play, and it's something very different on the mm-hmm. stage, the Globe Theater. Now you take it and you put it into a book form. I've been talking about it a little bit in some of the talks I've been giving about containers. I have a couple different favorite coffee mugs. You know, one's like a little bit too small, but it's really cool. And my daughter made it for me. And one's like the perfect size, but it's fragile. And these are different containers. They all hold the coffee, but they do something different. They represent something different. The stage, when you go out to APT, you hear the play, you see it. That's one thing. But to be able to read it, to go back through those lines, you get a different experience. Mm-hmm. So the folio next door at the Chazen Museum, next door from us right now, is one container that has preserved Shakespeare, preserved his words across time.
Talking to Joshua Calhoun from UW-Madison about the first folio, this collection of Shakespeare plays published in 1623, one of the remaining editions. What was the print run on something like this, and how many have survived to this day?
That's a great question. So it's actually not a rare book by almost any standard. Mm-hmm. We believe that about 750 were printed. We can be reasonably confident no more than 1,000 were printed. Of that number, we know of 235 that survive today. And if you start thinking of private collectors, maybe 250. So it's quite possible a third of them survive. Mm. But, you know, I looked up the first generation iPod from 15 years ago. Mm. On eBay, you can get it for about $115. Or you can get this unopened package of it for $20,000, right? So the folio comes in a lot of different states. There are different, they've been cut apart. The Folger Shakespeare Library has 82 first folios, but only 13 of those are complete. So they're in different states, and we had recognized, like a first-generation iPod, that it's a historic piece of technology, but it depends on the wear and tear. And what's interesting is, if you ask me, I'd like the one that's been used, that's all scratched up, because you can see how people use that technology. I think that's really interesting, as opposed to the ones in the box still.
Now, this came from, you mentioned the Folger Library Collection. They've decided to put this one edition on tour, right? And why Madison? Why was the Chazen selected?
Yeah, well, largely because of a lot of work by people here, especially headed up by Susan Baraboo at the libraries. And she put in this grant. She pulled together a whole team of interdisciplinary scholars who have different interest in this folio for different reasons. The Chazen said, we can host this object here. They usually do, they're not usually hosting books next door at the Chazen, but they've done this amazing poster collection around it. And they've got this just really wonderful exhibit space that they could put it in. I think that we were able to convince them that they should bring it here. And I also think, the director of the Folger, Mike Whitmore, is a former faculty here. I don't think we got any favors. But I think that, he must have felt a little support for us.
Now, when we go in to see it, it might be worth a repeat visit, right? Because it's going to be open to different pages as the exhibit goes along?
It's actually going to be open to the same page.
The same page.
As I understand,
okay.
It's going to be open to the little-known speech, To Be or Not to Be. That is the question from Hamlet. And it'll be interesting to see, though. You'll see how it's split across columns in the page in a way you would sort of almost imagine iconically in the middle of the page. It'll be interesting to see it, to see how it's printed. And one of the fun things is you'll have long S's, which look like F's, mm-hmm. and so you'll see things that look like fleep, like to die, to fleep, and readers, I always like watching
people. That's not millennial slang.
It's not millennial slang. Maybe it will be fleek, who knows, but I think it's a lot of fun to watch people try to figure out that technology.
Now, you teach a class, I understand, on Shakespeare and the media. Tell us a little about that.
Yeah, I'm co-teaching that course with friend and colleague Jonathan Senshin, who's in the library sciences, and we're really helping students to think through how Shakespeare gets to us. I always have this kind of shtick, we all do, but I talk to students about, if you have a really good idea, whether you're Galileo or Shakespeare or Marie Curie, you have a great idea and you want to share it with other people across time, like 100 years later, you have to figure out how to hold that idea in your hand and share it with others. And the folio is one example of how you can hold Shakespeare and share it, but so is a smartphone. And so we're trying to help students think about how their own ideas are mediated by thinking, well, is it Shakespeare's mediated across time and remediated and remixed?
All right. What is next? So what else is going on at this exhibit of the First Folio between now and December 11th?
So there are a few different events. I know my colleague Stephanie Elski is doing a talk next week, and there's a lot of different there's a global hotspot talk I'm doing. We have Falstaff here. Verdi's Falstaff is going on Friday and Sunday and Tuesday. And then the other thing that's worth noting is if you really like the book, go next door to the Memorial Library. Special Collections has a second, third, and fourth folio on display, along with a lot of other really wonderful books from the 16th and 17th century that will set the context of the world into which the folio was printed.
Joshua, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Joshua Calhoun, Assistant Professor of English at UW-Madison. He's been telling us about Shakespeare's First Folio, this early collection after Shakespeare passed away of many of his plays. You can see that on display at the Chazen Museum of Art in Madison until December 11th.